Talk a little World Cup of soccer. Steve Sandor, analyst for FC Edmonton, of course, longtime soccer fan. Who are you cheering for in the World Cup, Steve?
You know, honestly, I can honestly say I don't have a dog in the race. If Canada's not there, and since, you know, you can see people might pick up my last name's Hungarian, and while our glory days are long gone from Hungary, a former soccer power. I mean, I don't think there's a soccer power that has fallen as hard as Hungary has.
What happened? Why? Like, why'd you guys fall?
I think it's just a general indifference in the country. Hungary, up until the 1970s, you would have said, what's the best country to ever win the World Cup? And that would have been Hungary, two finals, and, you know, arguably the victims of the biggest upset in World Cup history in 1954, losing the final to West Germany when they were heavily favored to win, were heavy favorites to win the World Cup. It had absolutely blown through the 1954 World Cup through all the qualifying stages and all of the preliminary games, winning by scores like 9-0 and 8-3, 7-2. Like, that's how dominant they were. And then to lose that World Cup final was huge. And there still is, like, when you go to Hungary, a collective hangover from 1954 that's never gone away, being the victims of that loss. People who weren't alive when that game happened still carry it like it's like a cross everyone bears. That just shows you how big the World Cup is. The fact that I think it actually was the beginning of the end of what, through the first part of the century, was one of the biggest soccer programs in all of the world.
Steve, yeah, it's true. It's funny how they fall. Now, Canada, of course, we've only been in the World Cup once. And and we didn't score a goal. You look at how the other teams in CONCACAF are doing right now. I guess you can say, well, that's a good thing, but it's also maybe a negative because it shows how far Canada has to go. Like, realistically, how far does Canada have to go before you think they can seriously contend to make it to the World Cup, and then to get there to even win a game or two?
Well, I think first off, I see it as a good thing.
Okay.
The most important reason being is CONCACAF has lobbied long and hard that they are the most unloved region in FIFA. That if you look historically, Mexico does very, very well. United States has a good record in recent World Cups, much better than you'd see Asia and Africa have from their countries collectively. And we're seeing it again with obviously Costa Rica getting that upset win over Uruguay, Mexico doing very, very well this World Cup, the United States winning yesterday, and really Honduras, who's the team that beat Canada 8-1 in qualifying, is the weak sister of the group. But at the same time, CONCACAF's been lobbying long and hard, saying, why do we have fewer spots in the World Cup than Africa and Asia, when our teams are traditionally better at the World Cup than Africa and Asia, and this will add fuel to the fire. And the better the CONCACAF teams do, I do think it adds strength to Canada's bid for the 2026 World Cup to host it. I talk long and hard about this. We have a goal now that we've set forward to host the World Cup in 2026. We're the first country to announce our official bid, that we're in it to win it. And we have to shape up our program because we don't want to be like a South Africa-type host that go out with a whimper at a World Cup that's going to be held on our home soil if we get it. And we have to start thinking that way, that we might get it. And it is right now, I think our odds are fairly decent to have the 2026 World Cup, and we need to be better. And yes, we have a long way to go, but part of that has to be learning to deal with playing on the road in Central America. It's a totally different animal. Even the big European clubs, I think, if they had to come in, even if you brought some of the teams like a Belgium or a Russia or someone in, and you had to make them deal with having to go to Honduras, some of the most dangerous cities in the world in terms of just living. And what players will tell you, the stories of having to go down there and play, and you think to even get a result, you're scared to get a result. And until people realize how difficult that is, they don't understand how massive the challenge is for Canada to overcome being in CONCACAF. I think an extra spot or two would really help. And I think it would be fair for CONCACAF. I do think that Africa and Asia are both overrepresented. I know it's not the politically correct thing to say, but I think that that CONCACAF is more deserving of a spot than those two regions are.
Steve Sandor joins us, analyst for FC Edmonton, talking World Cup. There's, you know, Germany blew out Portugal, and I'm cheering for the Germans. That's my team, always has been. Ancestors are German, and unfortunately, Canada's really never in the World Cup. That was a surprising victory to me, 4-0, in how they dominated. I know they were up a man for, I think, 48 or whatever it was, 50 minutes of that game. But you look at the Netherlands and you look at Germany, which team do you think had the more dominating performance in their victory?
Oh, boy, that would be a tough one to call. The Spanish team, I would have to give it to the Dutch because I think the Spanish are much better than the Portuguese. The Portuguese, let's face it, they didn't qualify all that strongly. They have in the last couple of World Cups. They've had a lot of nervous times going through qualifying. It's simply because if Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't go, they don't go. They're not a very deep national side, certainly not as good as they were a generation ago. Definitely taking a big step back. Spain is Spain, and for what the Netherlands did to Spain, was stunning. I wasn't that surprised to see Germany rack it up on Portugal. Portugal's a team that the book on it is it self-destructs if you get them early, and they did that. They did exactly that, and they are a team that, outside of Cristiano Ronaldo, will struggle to score. They will struggle to find chances. They're not that deep. You look at the benches. Germany's bench is another side's national team. Germany's bench is better than about four or five of the other European national teams that are there. Germany just started, okay, the guys on the bench are going to play, it's an embarrassment of riches, and that's how deep they are. They're deep at every position. Portugal is not deep at every position. And in fact, I thought at the striker position they struggle. In a lot of the areas in midfield outside of Ronaldo, they struggle. I like them at fullback. I don't like them at all in the middle of the defense. And I think when you compare man for man, yes, Portugal has Cristiano Ronaldo, who's one of the best players on the planet, if not the best. But at the other 10 positions, you would say Germany wins that matchup, Germany wins that matchup, Germany wins that matchup, Germany wins that matchup. And just the numbers game will dictate that Germany would dominate that game.
The United States scored in the first minute yesterday and then in the final minute, basically, to defeat Ghana. Do you think the States can defeat Portugal? How do they match up?
Yes, but we'll see. Have to see how some of their injuries do. Clint Dempsey, we'll see if he's going to play with a mask or not. Looked like he broke his nose in that game, or at least did some serious damage to it when he got kicked in the face. They have a couple of injuries they're going to be sweating on. Matt Beisler, the defender, obviously Josie Altidore, their striker. Both got hurt, looked like muscle-related injuries. That's troubling for a team that's not very, very deep. But again, I just talked about, I don't think Portugal's all that deep. And I got to tell you, though, the Americans, at least the Americans I follow, the Americans I read, they're trying to catch up with the English for self-loathing when it comes to not being able to celebrate a win. Yes, I know that for the vast majority of the game, they were outplayed and outpossessed by Ghana,
yeah,
but they got the result, and sometimes that's what you have to do in international football, is tough it out and get the goals and take your chances, and you have to understand that's just part of international football, is sometimes you're not the best team, but you take advantage of your chances. But there's a lot of introspection going on with the United States soccer community today that I'm actually quite surprised by, that they feel that there's a lot to be desired from that result. And I'm like, that's the one you have to have. If you're going to get out of this group, you have to have the Ghana game. They got the Ghana game. They should feel a bit better than I think that they do. Especially, again, and I think this goes for Spain. It goes for Portugal. Goal difference is the next tiebreaker in the World Cup, and Portugal's -4, and Spain is -4, and those are huge hurdles to overcome. You talked about Spain and Chile tomorrow. Spain's not just got to beat Chile. Spain's got to beat Chile by 3 goals. Chile is +2. Spain is -4. So to get even, Spain needs to win by 3 to get even on the goal difference ledger and to get even in the standings. So even Chile could look at just losing to Spain by 1 goal is a moral victory, that they're still ahead in the standings going to that final game, because it's not head-to-head record, it's goal difference. And that's a huge obstacle for both Portugal and Spain to get over.
Do you like that rule? Should it be head-to-head first, then goal differential?
I absolutely hate that rule. I like the leagues. There are some of the pro leagues in Europe have switched to head-to-head. I think goal difference is an extremely cruel way to for a team to go out. I think I used this example on Twitter earlier. Let's look at Mexico. They tie Brazil today, have an excellent result. Goalkeeper stands on his head. They should be leading this group right now, because you could look at it that their result, they had 2 good goals taken away from them against Cameroon. The referee robbed them of two, or the linesman robbed them of 2 goals. They should have won that game 3-0. They only won it 1-0. So now they're behind Brazil on goal difference, when you could argue their results have been better. They've been the better of the two teams going through their first 2 games. I don't love going to goal difference. I mean, going goal difference ahead of head-to-head. My thing is, if you beat that team, you deserve to be ahead of that team, especially if you only play once on neutral territory. That should be the big thing. And let's face it, if a team is pushing for a goal to tie a game, let's say it's a 2-1 game, and the opposition are pushing to score, and you score a late one because they're pushing every man up, that's a cheapie. It's like scoring an empty net goal. It would be like the NHL giving bonus points for empty net goals. To me, it's a silly way to decide a tournament, a silly way to decide who's better than who. But, you know, I think goal difference is there to try to encourage teams to play offensively and rack up the goals. I think it's a bit unfair.
Has any team surprised you? I know most teams have only played one game, excluding the Brazil game earlier today with Mexico. But is there a team you look and say, okay, you know what, I think this team I didn't have projected to come out, but now they likely could reach the Sweet 16?
Well, I don't know if Costa Rica is going to make that Sweet 16. Uruguay were quite poor in that second half of that game, but you have to look at the result and just say what it means to them as a soccer program to get that result against Uruguay that they did in the first round. That, to me, was one of the matches of the first sector of games there, with them getting that 3-1 win. Some wonderful goals, too, from Costa Rica in that game. And I think that was one that I don't think anyone really saw coming. But I do think Mexico deserves some credit. Mexico's a team that struggled in qualifying. In CONCACAF, they had to go to the extra playoff, where they had to go to play New Zealand because they finished fourth. Usually that's the United States and Mexico and everybody else. And everyone else, Costa Rica and Honduras, actually finished ahead of Mexico in CONCACAF qualifying. So the Mexican team was a bit in tatters heading into this World Cup, and not a lot of people thought that this team would look good. And they were absolutely dominant over Cameroon. I thought that again, we talked about the officiating and them having two goals that were called offside that were clearly onside, called back. And then you looked at today, and yes, their keeper was excellent, but I thought Mexico strategically did some very, very good things against Brazil as well. And, you know, and it is part of what their team is. I mean, I think right now, if we talked about the goalkeeper of the tournament, I think Guillermo Ochoa of Mexico would be the guy you pick. Today it was just a stunning performance from a guy who's probably looking for a contract. And this is a big part of the World Cup. This is the off season for guys who are playing in Europe. His French league team got relegated this year, finished dead last in League One. So he's probably looking for a new contract. And what better way to entice European suitors or a bigger contract for yourself to move by having that performance like he did against Brazil today? Those free agents or guys who think that they're going to be on the move, boy, are they motivated to play at the World Cup.
Now, it's interesting. A lot of people, when they hear you're going to take replay, it's going to eliminate goals in soccer. You know, a lot of the criticism from the non-soccer fans is that there's not enough goals. So I agree with you. If it's clearly blatantly offside, you want to get that right. And if you have to go to instant replay when every other sport is using it for key points of the game, then you do it. But I've seen more goals, it seems, early in this World Cup than we had before. Is soccer becoming more offensive than we think?
No. No, and I mean, again, just go back to look at World Cup scores from the 1950s. And it was a common occurrence to see there was a 7-5s, 6-4s, 7-3. Soccer, if you look in the 50s and 60s, was a much higher scoring game. There's been a lot of technological advancements to soccer, which have helped defenses. Like any sport, and this goes for basketball, football, hockey, video helps defense 10 times more than it helps offense. So the more use of video, the more every sport becomes defensive. If you want hockey or soccer or basketball to become more free-flowing, ban teams from using videos or computers in their dressing room and ban teams from advanced scouting. Then you'll get more offense than any systemic thing that you can do in the rule book.
Yeah, that's true.
But because we all know, what do advanced scouts work on 95% of the time? How to defend against this team. They don't tell you how to score against this team. They worry about how to defend against it. And that's just a part of everything that we do. Soccer tactically has become more defensive, but a big part of it, and if you look at it, is ironically why the game was much more high scoring in the 40s and 50s and 30s and 20s, is the ball. The ball used to be a big heavy leather lunking thing that you couldn't kick more than 30 yards. So because you couldn't kick it the length of the field, you couldn't dream of kicking it that far. When teams attacked, if you watch videos from the 50s, everyone attacked. They weren't afraid of a long ball over the top. But now you have defenders who have to hang back because you can't trust that a team's going to pop a ball over the top when you're attacking them and then have a break on you. So you attack more conservatively because the ball is a lot lighter. The funny thing is that sometimes there's unintended consequences, and I'm not saying we should go back to a heavy leather ball, but the heavy leather ball meant that there was a lot more goals scored because teams could attack and five or six guys in the box, and they weren't worried about someone popping the ball over the top on them. So, you know, the game has changed, but this World Cup, I just think a lot of coaches this year are not playing like they're afraid to lose. The World Cup is such a big stake and such a big event that I think a lot of teams come in here, especially the smaller countries, and they play like they're afraid to lose, and they play extremely defensively. And so far in this World Cup, we're seeing a lot of teams play with a lot more attacking vigor, a lot more of an attacking formation. And, you know, I'm quite surprised because usually World Cups can be pretty strategic and pretty cagey because teams are so worried that the stakes are so high that they don't want to open up the games. But we're seeing so many goals early in games that are opening them right up.
Yeah, I love it.
That it's been a very, very different World Cup that way than, you know, maybe since 1982, which I think was the last sort of really, you know, great World Cup where we can say, wow, that was one that people tell their grandchildren about.
Steve, always good to talk soccer with you. We'll do it throughout the World Cup. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.